and leaving him hanging there. And why would we leave this man hanging? He's one of our favourite guests to have on World Football Daily. A great chap who's always making time for us, and we always enjoy having a chat with him about anything to do with European football. And he knows all when it comes to the European game. A man who we could fling out some Turkish football questions, fire in a bit of Ukrainian, and wrap it all up with some Slovenian football, and I'm sure he'd be able to give us the lowdown on it all. Of course, we're going to stick with Germany for today. It's the big bad Brassel, Andy Brassel, joining us here on World Football Daily once again. Andy, mate, a pleasure to have you on board, man. How you been?
Oh, I'm well, mate. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Getting through today on fumes slightly, but we'll come to that later on, I believe, in the show. I'll probably have to explain myself to Rafa whilst I'm yawning. But no, we will not divert down that path, and we will stay on path because you're in Germany right about now, mate. You are the lucky, dare I say, SOB that is that is out covering the German Cup at the moment.
Yeah, I'm in between two games. I was at Frankfurt, Eintracht Frankfurt versus Borussia Dortmund last night, and it's Hamburg versus Bayern tonight. I've just arrived in the north for that. So, I think I'm not alone in fearing for Hamburg after their recent run and the fact that it's Bayern. But, you know, the Cup's the Cup. Maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised.
I think most people are just kind of holding back and biting their tongue at this moment in time that you're seeing Dortmund and then Munich on consecutive nights kind of thing. I think everybody's a little bit jealous of that. Let's look at this Dortmund side. It's been a really peculiar season for Klopp. There was so much anticipation going in that they might be able to mount a challenge on at least two titles, the Champions League and the Bundesliga. It's not happened through injuries and through problems and obviously Lewandowski signing for Munich. Has that caused extra and added extra tension into that dressing room at all, do you think, Andy?
Well, I think it's fine outside the dressing room, but what impressed me most, and I thought Lewandowski had a really good game in Frankfurt last night, is that he's still totally committed. I don't think there's ever been any doubt over that. And I think, you know, he still has the same relationship with the team that he always did have. I think that's really important because there's all this stuff going on outside. Of course, he got falsely accused of hitting a teenager in a traffic dispute, and then he woke up last Monday morning to find his Porsche sitting on bricks rather than having any actual wheels. So I think there's a sense of resentment off the pitch, just as there was with Mario Götze before him. But I don't know. I tend to think the Götze one cut deepest, A, because it wasn't seen coming by anyone, and B, because he was seen as a sort of son of the soil, having come up through the youth academy. But Lewandowski was as committed as ever last night, as he always is. He had an extraordinary running battle with Carlos Zambrano, the rather, I don't want to say nasty, I'm going to say nasty, central defender from Eintracht Frankfurt. There's no doubt he's going to give every bit he's got until the end of the season. I think the injuries thing, you can't really get away from it. I don't think there's any club in the world that really could have coped with what they've been through. It's just been extraordinary in terms of the catalogue of them. But, you know, I think they've just about held it together. And there's a feeling that even though, you know, they had Hummels out, Bender, Royce, Subotic, who's obviously going to miss the season last night, that they're at least finding some sort of even keel. They played reasonably well at Eintracht. And just about got the win. They made quite hard work of it, and you know they do tend to miss a load of chances. That's one of their keynote characteristics. But you know, I think that they found a way to win. There's now three away wins in a row. Shows that you know there's still that grit, there's still that determination, and you know I wouldn't rule them out of the Pokal or even the Champions League.
It's a tough season for their fans to take as well. Obviously, seeing, as you say, another great star, so to speak, Götze going and Lewandowski then moving off to Bayern come the end of this season as well. It's hard to get the atmosphere of the fans, really, when you're watching it on a television, on an international feed? What was it like from the fans in Frankfurt, the Dortmund fans that travelled last night for the game? What do you sense from them, their thoughts around the club and in their actions in the stands?
Well, I think they're pretty happy with things. I mean, the crisis, in inverted commas, is very much, as you say, Ollie, and a sort of international perception, because they won the Bundesliga 2 years in a row, because they got to the Champions League final. There's this feeling that, you know, they should be maybe, I don't know, spending more on players, fighting Bayern every step of the way. But Hans-Joachim Watzke, the general manager, of course, said a way back, look, Bayern have got twice our budget. What can you do about it? And I think 95% of fans completely understand that, and they consider their value, their values and the club's values as something much, much more than just sport. Of course, they like to win, but, you know, there was no sense of anyone getting on Jurgen Klopp's back before Christmas when they had that run of defeats. I think they still feel that Klopp's doing a great job, that the team's pulling in the right direction. And, you know, they've not forgotten that it was less than 10 years ago that they nearly went to the wall. So they'll be looking forward to these Champions League nights. They're very enthusiastic about getting through the Pokal as well. I mean, there were 5,100 fans who came from Dortmund on a pretty cold Tuesday night, but there are a lot more in other parts of the stadium as well. So they're very well supported and very enthusiastically supported. And, you know, I think they're globally reasonably happy with things.
You said that there's a feeling of an even keel now as well at Dortmund. How much has that just come from time of the almost new makeshift back four getting the opportunity to gel together? Because as with a strike force pairing, a centre-back pairing in particular is so much based around the quality and relationship of the two centre-backs have together, of knowing each other's step before the other makes it almost.
Yeah, I mean, they're still busking that to an extent. Of course, Manuel Friedrich had, I don't know, 6 months out of the game, and he rarely played last season after leaving Leverkusen. So it's been a huge step up for him. You know, his first game was against Bayern in the Bundesliga. So it's been a big leap for him. I think Socrates has already emerged as a leader, which I think is very, very important in their defence. And having Piszczek and Schmelzer back on the wide fullback positions as well has made a major difference. And I think, you know, other leaders have stepped up. Like Weidenfeld has been there the whole way, and we know a good sort of motivating force he is. I think Nuri Sahin, someone who knows the club really well, has stepped up. Sebastian Kehl came back in, the club captain, and had a good game last night. So I think we're getting a sense that, you know, even though they've suffered a lot of injuries, this squad's not as thin as some people have suggested.
It's not like the FA Cup, is it? The Pokal in Germany. I get the sense it's regarded a lot higher than maybe English Cup competitions are, Andy.
Well, I don't know. I think there does need to be something done to the FA Cup. I read a really interesting article a while back by Christian Jack saying that, like, maybe all the rounds could be played in a really short space of time. Like, you could have cup weeks where you could play three games or something like that. I think that's a really interesting idea. I certainly think the Copa del Rey has been livened up by the fact they have quick fire rounds all through the midweeks in January. I think there's a lot of reasons that the FA Cup's not what it was. I think the squad rotation is a huge part of that. Of course, you think of the Manchester United pullout in 2000, which was not great either. It needs some sort of shot in the arm. I think to do away with replays would be pretty logical as well. Just go straight for extra time and penalties to remove those sort of concerns about the calendar. But yeah, there's no doubt that the Pokal's taken very, very seriously. But then again, it's more about what the fans want here in Germany. Whereas, I don't know, I think if you look at, say, Newcastle United, a club who really chucked away their chance of having a go at the FA Cup, you know, probably not going to qualify for Europe. They're not going to go down. What else have they got to play for in the season? And, you know, they played a team against Cardiff where they brought on their top scorer, Loic Bremming, with 1 minute left of normal time. And as a fan, I'd be infuriated by that. If you were a coach here and you did that, you'd probably get fired, you know, because the fans just wouldn't have it. I think it just showed absolute contempt for those supporters. And, you know, that's why there's not that magic about the cup anymore, because there's a sense that the clubs really deprioritise it.
In that sense, then, what do the fans want from Bayern Munich? I mean, Pep Guardiola, I'm sure, wants to almost emulate what Heinkes did last year, just to show that he can come in and replicate those feats, the phenomenal feats from last season. But will the fans be happy with maybe a drop in performances in the Pokal for the league and for the Champions League to continue as they are doing, and to ensure that full focus stays in Europe and the Dutch title race?
I don't think it's an either or, really, for Bayern, because you look at the squad they've got, and you know, they've just got such a plethora of options. Everyone's so competitive. I think, you know, you can look at, say, Claudio Pizarro is a really good example. You know, he's one of the best substitutes you could have in Europe. He's vastly experienced. He's hugely intelligent. No foreign player in the Bundesliga has scored more goals than him, and he barely plays. But when he does play, he's absolutely ready. There's no question of him switching off or anything like that. And, you know, I think that's a really good example of the sort of level of professional you have in the Bayern squad. I don't think it'll be a case of Guardiola deciding, right, we're going to, you know, take it down a notch in this or anything like that. It's about the players, about their desire, about their hunger. Now, I think, you know, the hunger is something we've really seen from Guardiola this season as well. He's been like more intense and wired than we've ever seen him in public before. And, you know, I think that's a good indicator of the way Bayern are going to go. And, well, it doesn't look good for Hamburg.
Yeah, touching on Hamburg here, Andy, 6 losses in a row now. It's not really the kind of form that you want to be going into when you're facing a side that won everything but about the kitchen sink, I suppose, in European football last year.
That's right. To be fair, talking of prioritising or deprioritising, for Hamburg, it's got to be all about staying up this season now. I think if they can get a little run together, I think they will manage it. I think Werder Bremen are not a good side. There are some pretty poor teams down there, and it's something we've seen in the English Premier League, I think, in recent seasons. You know, you think, you know, anyone from the bottom 8 would be worthy of going down the last couple of seasons. I think you can almost say that about the Bundesliga. I think Stuttgart are in trouble, and they're only a couple of points above, and, you know, they've got Vedad Ibisevic banned for 5 games now after he was sent off at the weekend, which is a huge blow for them. So it's all about whether Hamburg can get it together. They've got the quality of players where they should just about do it. But I think there's a growing sense that it won't be under Bert van Marwijk. You know, there's a sense that he's not quite sort of, I don't know, motivated is the right word, but he's not quite got that sort of intensity, if we go back to the Guardiola theme, to really grab the team by the scruff of the neck. The fact that they lost the first game back after the winter break, the first game of the Rückrunde, 3-0 at home to Schalke, and from there was no reaction. They went and got belted at Hoffenheim, and they were terrible in that. And then they went and got belted at home by Hertha Berlin. You know, 3 successive 3-0 defeats. And you think, where can they really go from here? The word over here is that Felix Magat is closer than ever to getting the job. There has to be any sort of decision to go that way. It has to be reached by a 3-quarter majority. By the democratically elected in sort of supporters board at Hamburg, the governance board, which is sort of put forward by the supporters. They're looking to change the way that the clubs run in the future. That's a different story. But I think that they're looking to Magat, not just because of what he represents in their glorious past and the 83 European Cup win, but also the fact that he's just such a brutal disciplinarian. And I mean, you know, he was going a bit far in the last sort of days of Wolfsburg, where, you know, he's taking players on training runs and pouring away drinking water in front of them and stuff like that. But I think that there's a growing feeling that the supporters' patience has snapped, and the supporters have been, you know, very understanding towards their players. But that's pretty much run out. And you know, if I can get this over the line and get McGatt in, that's what they want to do now, I think.
Yeah, it's quite funny though with Hamburg, because obviously last year, beginning of the year, everybody saying they were a club that were destined to be going down. This year, the start of the season, it was a club that they can build and push on. They lost a big part though with Heung-min Son going to Leverkusen in August. Are you surprised at maybe the impact that losing him has had on this side, or does it run a lot deeper than that?
I think it runs a little deeper than that. I think it's an important transfer to underline, Ollie. I think you're absolutely right to do that, because it sort of shows really how their status has diminished, how a player like Son would turn his back on a club of Hamburg size and say, look, I'm going to go to Leverkusen, which maybe is a town that doesn't traditionally have such passion for football as Hamburg does. But, you know, maybe I can fulfil my dreams there. Maybe I can play regular Champions League there. But I think from a sporting perspective, he's made a great decision. You know, I think he's someone who can build into being a really big star. I think from that perspective, that loss really hurt. I think certainly in terms of tempo as well, and I think you see it especially the way he works in that Bayer Leverkusen front three with Kiesling and Sidney Sam, who of course is going to be at Schalke next season, talking about hotbeds of football passion. I think that when you look at the sort of mobility they've got, that's exactly what Hamburg don't really have at the moment. You know, so much is waiting for Rafael van der Vaart to give them a prod. Now, eventually, Hakan Çalhanoğlu will be ready to take over that role. He's just turned 20. It's good news for him for them and for him, I think. He signed an extended contract last week, but he's not ready to lead the team forward at the moment. And I think, you know, there are a few sort of gaps in terms of players. They've not quite got the quality, certainly in defence, and I think that really showed up against Schalke, because that is the sort of level they need to be. I still think they've got a good enough squad not to go down, should they get it right behind the scenes. But if they're looking to press up where they want to be, as you were saying, you know, it's sort of Schalke, Gladbach, that's the sort of level of squads that they need to equal. And, you know, I think the technical quality gap, as well as confidence and desire and all that, was all too evident when they played Schalke.
I want to ask you about Schalke as well, finally, because they're a side, Andy, that we've seen managers go under pressure a lot at Schalke over the last kind of 2 years or so.
Yeah.
Very quickly. Starting though, coming out of the gates, firing all guns blazing for this second half of the season with three wins from their first three games, and really got to turn a phrase on it, a real kind of bit of vinegar about them coming into the second half of the season.
Yeah, they really have. And what I think's interesting is that it's happened without Julian Draxler, who's been injured, of course. Now, he was the one who saw them through the first part of the season. He really saw them through the Champions League qualifiers. They didn't play well in either of them. And, you know, he stood up in the press conference and said, look, someone's got to take responsibility and we've got to get this massive club in the Champions League. It's where we belong. And then he went and did it with his performances in the games, which I thought was extraordinary from a teenager as he was then. And, you know, I think a big part of the reason why so many people want him, it's not just about his technical quality, it's about his mental strength. To do that at a club like Schalke is something extraordinary. But I think that they've managed to, you know, as you say, show a bit of gusto without him. I think he's really, really important. Of course, Kevin Prince Boateng has been great. The return of Huntelaar has been very, very important too. But, you know, there are so many other players who have sort of stepped up. And I think Jens Keller has stepped up as well. Having that vote of confidence before Christmas, I think, has really worked for him. The fact that they've played a lot more boldly in the past, you know, they've been playing with maybe Neustetter and Jones as the two deep midfielders, and then getting thrown completely off course when Jones bombed Miles out of position. Of course, he's gone on loan to Beşiktaş now. But what they've done is they've put a second midfielder in front of the defence, ostensibly in front of the defence, in Boateng, who they know is going to go. So Neustetter knows it's all on him now. I still think they're a flawed team, but they're going to beat a lot more teams than they lose to They're going to entertain as well because they only really know one way to play. And all their big players are up for it at the moment. And I think that's so, so important. They've removed the doubt they had in goal by, I mean, it's been harsh, but Timo Hildebrand getting pushed aside after that error at Chelsea and Fairman coming in. There's just so much more certainty about them and so much more certainty about Jens Keller. And I think that's really, really important in terms of sealing that Champions League place. And in terms of making a decent fist of this Champions League tie against Real Madrid, of course, no one expects them to get through it, but they don't want to get humiliated either.
Can we just finally as well, Andy, before I let you go, I need to ask you a personal... Well, it's not a personal question. I'm not going to ask you anything weird like that. Don't worry about it. But maybe off air. No, but something that's been annoying me around Julian Draxler, the English press have been going on and on throughout January saying that if Arsenal got him, he'd be the new Robin Van Persie. Now, do you see Julian Draxler as a goal scorer in that same sense that Van Persie does? Van Persie was or became?
No, not really. And I think there's an important definition to make between Van Persie switching from wing to centre forward and Draxler doing that. If you look back in recent Dutch football history, even there's a great tradition of forwards learning their trade on the wing and then moving inside. Dennis Bergkamp, obviously, although he wasn't an out-and-out number nine, Ruud van Nistelrooy being another. I think if Arsenal are really going to go out and spend money and they're serious about adding quality to what they've got, Draxler would be nice to have. I think he would be nice to have for anyone. But I don't think he's the player they need. And I don't understand why you would go out and spend the thick end of £40 million on someone who's a number 10 to make him into a number 9. When, well, if that's the case, why not spend 25, 30 million on a proper number 9?
Number 9, yeah.
If that's really what you want. I mean, that seems the most obvious thing. But I don't know if there's any substance behind it or it's just an extension of the idea that Wenger loves a pet project. This would be a heinously expensive pet project. I think he's just better off. I think it's clear where Arsenal's strengths and weaknesses lie, and I think just someone to take the pressure off Giroud would be a huge start. So why not invest in that?
A gold-plated puppy, I think, is what Julian Draxler would be for Arsene Wenger if that's what they got. The number of people, in all seriousness, the number of times I've been having a chat down a pub or somewhere, and I've had a tap on the shoulder and said, "Yeah, well, we should have got Draxler or something like that," and I've tried to explain it to them, and Arsenal fans are still livid that Wenger didn't go and get Draxler. And I've been completely in the same agreement as you, Andy. Would have been a big money mistake, I think, an unnecessary purchase for the Gunners. Yeah. So Arsenal fans, relax. It doesn't matter now. Andy, an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, mate, as always. Always enjoy having a chat and a catch-up with you here on World Football Daily, mate. We can't wait to get you back on as soon as you're free and stop gallivanting around Europe at all these fine football matches. And I hope you have a cracking time in Germany, mate. And have a two-pint Stein for me as well, please, man.
I'll try and fit one in. Thank you.
I'm sure there's time. Take care, mate, and have a cracking time in Germany, and we'll catch up soon.
Cheers. Been a pleasure.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. Andy Brassel there joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through the German Cup action coming your way this evening. A bit of German Bundesliga chat as well, the fallout from the transfer window, and of course, a little bit of post-German break action as well. The first three games are in the bag and Schalke have started very well indeed. Massive thanks there to Andy Brassel joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through some of the German Cup action coming your way tonight. Leverkusen taking on Kaiserslautern, Hamburg, Bayern and Wolfsburg, Hoffenheim, Dortmund with that win last night over Eintracht Frankfurt. One of the more aggressive names, I think.